The National Education Association is made up of 3.2 million individuals who are members. We have people who work in education from pre-K all the way through graduate school, mainly teachers, but we also have all of the support professionals that work in school that make education possible for every child, the cafeteria workers, the secretaries, custodians. So it's education workers, pre-K through university.
And you're here to talk about the Elementary and Secondary Education Act. Tell our listeners what that is.
The Elementary Secondary Education Act was actually first passed in 1965, and the purpose of the legislation was to level the playing field for children in poverty, to make sure that they had that same shot at their dreams that all of the American children did. So it was under Lyndon Johnson when he was president, and it's gone through several reauthorizations. Every 6 years, Congress reauthorizes six plus. They don't do it exactly every 6 years. Excuse me. The last version was called No Child Left Behind. And so now we're approaching the reauthorization, and that could come. We don't know exactly when it'll be. It could be this fall before the election, could be in the lame duck, or more probably in the new Congress when it convenes in January.
And No Child Left Behind was quite controversial. What were some of the controversies? Remind our listeners why some people were opposed to some of the aspects of it.
One of the things that really changed in the No Child Left Behind from previous ESEA, Elementary Secondary Education Act, was the increase in the number of tests. All students, grades 3 through 8, were required to take a test in math and reading, and then they had a thing called AYP, or Adequate Yearly Progress. And so each school district then broke the students into subgroups by gender, by ethnicity, by wealth, by special education. And every subgroup had to make what they called AYP, to meet proficiency level. And if any one of those subgroups failed to make that mark, then the district was deemed a failure and they were labeled and a failure. And if you did that several years in a row, there were different things that could happen. So there was a lot of kind of a label punish and a lot of emphasis on testing.
Do you think that will be maintained when the reauthorization happens this year?
From the blueprint put out by the administration, I think they're recognizing that the focus was too narrow, that by only doing math and science, we saw a real narrowing of the curriculum. And education is more than just those two subjects, not to say they're not important, but the idea of history and the arts and music and civics education, all of that has to be part of the education. The second, I think, big change that will come is that they understand that one test given one day during the year just cannot adequately measure what a student learns or what a teacher is teaching. And I think as we move toward the reauthorization, there's going to be a heavy emphasis on coming up with what they call the second generation of assessments, multiple measures of student learning. See, every teacher ought to be able to demonstrate evidence of student learning, whether you're an art teacher, a drama teacher, a music teacher, or a math and reading teacher, we ought to be able to show that students are learning. So we're going to have to develop new assessments because, frankly, right now, those multiple assessments just don't exist.
The Obama administration has now a competitive grant process called Race to the Top funding, and there's been a second round recently announced, and Florida has been one of the recipients of Race to the Top funding, $700 million. Tell our listeners what that is and what Florida might expect.
Well, obviously, Florida is one of the lucky 12. They're going to have resources to try and level the playing field, to increase student achievement, to do the things that we know need to be done for every child in America. I think the fact that only 12 states out of the 50 are receiving Race to the Top funds demonstrates that the need far outdistances the resources available. And so I know those other 38 wish they also had those resources because they have the need. But what it means for Florida is they're going to have an opportunity to hopefully make real differences in the education of youth. It comes at a difficult time. Florida, like over 40 of the states, are facing incredible challenges in the economics of the time. And so it's difficult to think about what do we want to do more of in order to meet the needs of children when we're trying to survive through incredibly tough decisions to balance the budget.
And what do you think about the idea of having education grants being competitive rather than spreading it around to where it's needed to have states compete for grants?
Yeah, we have real concerns about the competitive nature. And I think those concerns come from more than just those of in the National Education Association. Members of Congress often express that their states, too, have those needs. So how do we address those needs when only some get it? Some of the other programs are more formula-driven, based on the number of students or needs. And so it's very important that we maintain those and not decrease the number of those formula driven. One of them is the school improvement grants. Those are go to all states, and then they work with the districts that most need those resources to bring up the level of achievement of students. So I think the debate and that conversation will continue in Congress is, what is the balance? Is there a place for competitive grants? If so, how much versus the formula driven?